Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 76. We are in the land, Cleveland, Ohio. You can hear the cold beverages popping.
I believe that was a cold beer in the Cleveland.
John Morgan is here. Cold coffee is with me and an extra special guest. You know when you get Dan Stupp out of his house, on the road, into the MMA junkie mansion, it's a good week. The editor-in-chief, the boss, this dude I have had to talk to whether I wanted to or not every day for the last 10 years of my life. Dan Stupp, how you doing, brother?
Good. It's been a decade now, hasn't it?
A decade, dude. Think about that. We've been together about 10 years, man. It's crazy. We started thinking about it. You and I were kind of talking. We had some dinner earlier. We took out our boys over here. They're sitting off in the distance watching some NFL from champions.co. We took them out. We started talking. It's weird, man. You can be a tough noob and have a decade in the sport. And it's funny. Like, you mentioned, I mean, people may not believe this. MMA Junkie started by a dude that's a tough noob.
Yeah. Like, I was renting UFC DVDs. I think the first one I rented was UFC 40. But that was still probably a year or two after it took place. But it's once the Ultimate Fighter, the first season started, I was like, okay, this is about to take off. Yep. Like, this is the website to, let's do some MMA.
That's what's up. And the rest is history, as they say. Let me just say, I'm feeling a little intimidated right now as I sit right here. I believe a couple of Ohio natives sitting across the table from me, sitting on home territory right now.
You got Northern Ohio though, and Southern Ohio.
Oh, so Central. y'all didn't even claim the same state?
I'm South Central. Columbus is South Central.
Oh, you're South Central.
Yeah, I'm South Central.
No one respects the Central people because they're Indians fans when the Indians are doing well. They're Reds fans when the Reds are doing well.
It's a true story.
They're Bengals fans when the Bengals are doing well. No one's a Browns fan because the Browns never do well.
It's a true story, even though I do love the Brownies. But it's funny because people ask me, they'll say, well, who's your favorite sports team in Ohio? And I said, that's easy. It's the Buckeyes.
Yeah. At least you got a proven winner there.
It's funny because today we were driving around Cleveland, and we actually went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which was awesome. I wish I could have gotten to spend more time there. I want to go back there. We shot a video there. Hopefully everybody got a chance to see it. And just kind of framed some of our highlights, something that we're going to try to do more of, feature the city a little bit more that we're in moving forward. But it was funny because we pulled up. I didn't realize that the stadium, I mean, is literally right on the lake right there. I mean, and it's got what's the name of the field?
First Energy. Yeah.
And it's got one of the wind.
Big, like, wind prop things right there.
And it was funny because, like, I realized, like, I've never, like, I had no idea. And I'm like, oh, because why the hell would I be watching the Cleveland Browns game? I felt kind of bad about that.
Statement.
But I know, but there's really just no reason to watch
the
Browns.
You didn't have a quarterback this year?
Because we've got like 73 quarterbacks to choose.
Oh, man. But I will say this. This is my first time to Cleveland. This is a pretty cool town. I think this is a town that has a pretty shit reputation. I think that's fair to say around the nation. If people are like, bro, you guys are going to Cleveland for the weekend? Like,
Mistake
on the lake. I'll tell you what, man. I think this is honestly.
What neighborhood are we in right now?
Tremont.
It's awesome.
Right?
Yeah, this is
a cool little neighborhood that we happen upon. We rented a little Airbnb house. The champions.co folks over there have just been leeching off of our greatness, hanging out in the MMA junkie mansion.
Sitting on the leather chairs.
Sitting on the leather couches over there, drinking. No, we got lucky. This little area, Tremont is cool. It's kind of like
everywhere.
A revitalized neighborhood.
This is nice.
There
is some truth to the fact when people talk a lot about Cleveland. There are some really still really rough areas in Cleveland, and we got really lucky in where this is at. Even downtown, though, has really transformed over the years. The flats is different. Mm-hmm. I mean, but the flats is still outrageous and fun. But, I mean, there's a lot of areas. I back in my day when I was – smoking a lot more of green things and taking a lot more things and playing music and played different clubs up in Cleveland. And there were some rough areas. And, granted, it's been some time, but Cleveland has transformed. It's a blue collar town. It's a hardworking town. I mean, people are very proud of where they're from. They're proud of being Clevelanders. They're about as diehard as it gets. I mean, you watch a game in the middle of winter and you look at these folks that sit out there in the winter and it's a badge of pride. So, I mean, it's a tough city.
I mean, we're here to cover UFC 203, of course. Stipe Miocic, Alistair Overeem. in the headline about UFC heavyweight titles online. I will say this, more so, and I know, Dan, you literally just got into town. I mean, you drove up. You haven't had a chance to experience much, but we've gotten out a little bit. We've been here a couple nights. The support for Stipe, for their own guy, their hometown guy, you know, we travel a lot, and a lot of times, we get to a city, and we're like, what are you here for? Oh, we're here for the UFC. And a lot of times we get to towns, and they're like, I didn't even know the UFC was coming this weekend or whatever. Every time that we've said it here, whether it be the lady at the cashier at the at the USC Hall of Fame, whether it be some of our Uber drivers, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, excuse me,
they haven't bought it yet.
They will.
They haven't.
WIMG, they're gonna make that shit happen. Don't you worry about that. Whether it be Uber drivers, whatever. Like as soon as we say we're here to cover the UFC, they're like, Stipe. Like they buy in. I think that's cool, man. I feel like this is a town that supports its own.
That's what I loved about the UFC was 6-7 years ago when they were hitting all the new cities and stuff. Like when they start coming to Columbus, and Rich Franklin isn't even Columbus. He's an hour and a half away in Cincinnati.
Yeah, Cincinnati.
But he was an Ohio guy, and the events are kind of centered around him or Rex Holman, the former Ohio State wrestler. We weren't getting that for a few years, but we got it earlier this year with Holly Holm in New Mexico and Albuquerque. Remember the parade they had there where just 50,000 people?
Cool.
And you got that with Stipe, you know, and then you had the Cavaliers right after that. So, no, I mean, Stipe kind of set the tone for Championship Cleveland, and then the Cavaliers came a few weeks later.
Yep.
No, I love when they come to new cities, especially like Cleveland, which probably should have had an event, you know, years ago.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're coming now, it feels like the UFC is 7 or 8 years ago when they're hitting all these new American cities.
Do you have any insight on why it took so long to hit to Cleveland? I mean, Columbus and Cincinnati were getting hit. Cincinnati only a couple times. Columbus seemed to be the market that they were really focused on. They brought WEC shows, Strikeforce shows. I mean, a lot of shows came. Why the hell did it take so long to get to Cleveland?
Well, I think we saw in Cincinnati the second UFC show there, the Strikeforce show. Like, they just didn't sell very well, and I think the UFC got to a point once Canada started growing, Brazil started growing, it was like, well, maybe we should slow down in the American cities because they're not all home runs like what we expected them to be. And I think that kind of hurt places like Cleveland once, you know, Cincinnati didn't do so well, Louisville was kind of hit or miss. Indianapolis had one of the worst shows in the history of the UFC. I think they kind of got, you know, kind of nervous about hitting some of these Midwest cities. But, I mean, you see it with Cleveland, but they need to start hitting the Midwest again because, I mean, those are their fans. That's where you sell out events because there's nothing else going on. And you can have the news cycle for an entire week like you do here in Cleveland.
I agree. I think it's awesome. The other thing that I think is cool that I feel like the UFC is trying to do more of, and it's weird because we're right during this ownership change and everybody's trying to find out, well, what does this mean for their business model? And what does this mean? And I don't think that's going to change at all. But Cole Coffey, I mean, you can talk about this a little bit because I think, like, for instance, this Cleveland show was not on the map until Stipe won.
That's true.
Yeah.
Just like the Manchester show wasn't on the map.
Had they announced the Cleveland show before Stipe had won the title?
No.
I don't even think it was a thought.
I don't even think they had thought about it. And the same thing with the Manchester show. Once Michael Bisping won, then they're like, oh, shit, we need to go to Manchester. And to me, I think that's brilliant. And I know – and the reason I wanted to ask you, Cole Coffey, is because you used to get – when you worked for the UFC, you used to see those production schedules where it was like, you know, you could see what the tentative plans were weeks out and months out. Not that I ever asked you for any information off of
and
those.
Not that I ever gave it.
Of course, and not that you would ever share that for me. No, but those things did exist. I've heard in theory, heard that there are – you know, sheets with cells and
it's
columns.
Weird. It's
and
like they planned ahead.
It's when they start going to like Macau in the Middle East. It's like, let's just go somewhere to go somewhere without really.
Well, and that's and the thing is, I feel like they're actually showing some flexibility now to go like, hey, listen, here's our tentative plan.
Yeah.
But now all of a sudden, we got Stipe. We need to go to Cleveland. We've got Bisping. We need to go to Manchester. I feel like – I don't want to say that's a new plan, but I feel like they're embracing that more right now, and I think that's fucking brilliant.
I think there's always going to be the point where they have the key cities that they know work well for them, but they also think that they know that they have to stretch out into old markets or maybe tap into old markets that they haven't maybe touched on in some time.
So I think they thought their only expansion – availability was outside the United States.
Yeah,
like, dude,
for
there's
years,
so many cities
right.
here that you still haven't hit. That
mm-hmm. Yeah, you're
know.
Right.
And like Indianapolis, I think it was Detroit, just had terrible shows. It's like, dude, like that can't be the only thing you offer him. Like, go back a year or two later and do it right and get him a good event, because that's a huge city.
I just heard somebody hit me up on Twitter that Detroit's opening up a brand new downtown-based arena. So I think that'll be good. Because I think the Palace of Auburn Hills, like, I mean, that's not Detroit.
It's not even Detroit. Yeah.
Just like Chicago.
Hoffman Estates.
Hoffman Estates. Don't even try to tell me that Chicago, dude. That's ridiculous.
You know, it's funny. But to double back to how and what you were saying about, I think there is flexibility now, especially when Stipe came around. I think it was – I mean, let's be honest. I'm very proud of Ohio. I'm very proud. I mean, you might not have gotten this.
Bro,
every time
you see Stevie, it's like,
you're from,
O-H.
You're from
O-H.
Ohio?
O-H.
Yeah.
O-H.
No idea.
But it's like,
you're
you know,
a Michigan fan.
You
I
look
have
at,
no idea.
But you look at guys, and I feel remiss if we don't bring up like Forrest Griffin when we talk about Columbus, Ohio, when we talk about stuff. We got Matt Brown, you know,
Cody
Garbrown.
Doing
you know, there's Q&A. All these. Garbrandt. There's all these guys. Jessica. I mean, there's all
George
these.
George Gershell back
you know,
in the
all
day.
These people coming up. So I think they were – yeah. They'd be remiss if they didn't. Once they finally had a champ, I think they were finally like, yes, now we can go back there. We have a reason. But it's tough because, you know, there's 50 states in the year. If they were going to try to give every state an event, they would never get to any other countries. They would never get to, you know, they would never do multiple shows in Las Vegas. So I think they're trying to balance out better the fact of getting those big markets that they'd be really dumb to not go back to. But it's tough because, yeah, you want to go, you want to stretch out, you want to tap into these other markets. And one, I mean, let's be honest, Ohio is probably the greatest state in the union half the time.
The Iron Workers Union.
But, I mean,
Culinary Union.
They might have a precedent. You know, they don't have a big – too big of union stuff out here. At least, I mean, there are some.
We got the casinos like now, though, so it's
now
only
they're starting to work. They're starting to work it in here, you know, right in the middle of fucking Columbus. We got one too, which is crazy. But you know, I mean, it's good that they're actually, you know, pushing out and things. And I think once you have a champ, you have to start catering to a champ. You have to play to his market. If not,
I agree.
You know, I mean, you're not you're doing your champs a disservice if you don't look in their local markets.
I think a good way of kind of explaining this to the layman is like they go to Sioux Falls, which great for Sioux Falls, but like what the Sioux Falls or that state know about champions? Like Ohio knows champions. Yep. Like Ohio State, you know, Reds won some World Series.
I saw today 8 presidents of the United States of America have come from Ohio.
Well,
if you want a president, they come from
Ohio. Yeah, well, I was going to say, if you look into some of they claim alum. It's not like they're all from. They lived in times. I think if you
read it on a stack.
And we've had some terrible presidents.
They're not the greatest.
Inside Quicken Loans Arena.
But I think
it
if
was
you
a
dive
stat
into
inside
it,
Quicken Loans Arena, so it must be true.
They've lived and they've done some time in here. Or they're associated. But I think if you look at
Quicken Loans Arena and your grace stats.
FU Arena that was named because somebody paid a lot of money and puts whatever. But I think they just tied. I think if you look back and they're not born and raised all 8 or whatever. But it is still an impressive fact that.
And don't you let any 8 of them roll through my hometown, Dallas, Texas. You see what we do to presidents.
I bring up the whole champions thing, and I think Stipe falls in this category. When I was, you know, before I started MMA Junkie, I was working for the Cincinnati Reds.
Right.
I think most people know that. When I was working there, I was talking to John Allen, the chief operating officer at the time. Really cool guy. He'd go around and shoot the shit with all the employees. But I was telling him how I was getting into MMA, which he thought was just fascinating because it sounded as barbaric.
Right.
You know, back then.
It's crazy.
And I was telling him, I was like, dude, there's actually this guy from Dayton who's the middleweight champion, this guy named Rich Franklin. He was like a school teacher. He's like, wait. He's like, he's a champion. I was like, yeah, middleweight division. He's like, have him come out and throw out our first pitch because they would always bring the high school kids out and stuff. But like, that's
PR
really,
team gave you. They were really happy with you for that, right? Like, they gave you some props.
Well, it like really kind of sparked my passion for the sport. It was like now I was the MMA guy within the front office and stuff, and I started MMA Junkie just a few months later because it was like, dude, no one's paying attention to this sport. But Rich Franklin was such a big deal in Cincinnati and Dayton, and now we're still seeing that years later in Cleveland with, you know, Stipe.
You said he's from Dayton. I thought you missed – is he really from Dayton?
It's Westchester. It's a little
suburb. I know Westchester. I know that's where he's from because I think Cincinnati is kind of like the accepted
– Well, it's like Westchester, which is where Matt Brown used to train, Gershell, Rich Franklin. It's pretty much exactly between Dayton and Cincinnati. So they both can kind of
claim
them.
Yeah. Okay, cool. No, actually, one of my best friends used to live in Westchester. That's hilarious. All right, let's talk about this main event. I mean, listen, we all try to pretend like we're experts or whatever. We are. I mean, we cover these fights. But you know, I always say it's hilarious because, I mean, literally all we do is pick the main events. Like, our staff picks.
Yeah.
It's not like we pick the whole card. Literally all we do is pick the main events. And our winner every year, we're always all within, like, two points of each other. And the winner gets, like, 65% every year. It's like two-thirds, you know what I mean? So, I mean, even us that, like, watch every fight, that's all we do, live and breathe this stuff. We're inside the bubble. We have trouble picking the winner. We get two-thirds of the time right. Now you say it's a heavyweight main event.
Jesus.
You know what I mean? Where it's like, literally, like, I just want to joke, like, hey, the first guy that lands flush will win the fight. Like, oh, no shit. Thanks for all the insight. But what are you guys feeling? Because I will say this is incredibly intriguing. Like, Stipe goes down to Brazil in this incredibly hostile environment, you know, on the road, knocks out Fabricio Werdum. I still contend, I think Fabricio felt the pressure. I think he chased when he shouldn't have chased because he felt pressure to put on a fight, and it cost him. Now the tables,
which makes you wonder if Stipe is now feeling the exact
100%
same thing.
Now the tables are completely turned. Now the UFC is coming to your hometown for the first time ever.
As if it's not hard enough alone to defend a heavyweight title in the UFC. Now you got all the added pressure.
But I mean, here's a dude that I mean, if he feels pressure, the guy is hilarious. His interviews are just like, "Hey man, I don't feel no pressure, man. I'm just here to do my job, man. I'm just going to do my thing, man. I'm just doing my thing." Like, all right.
I think he feels like he's playing with house money at this point. It's like, dude, I've reached the top. It's more than I ever expected. Like, anything from here on out, so I'm just going to enjoy it.
How crazy is this? I mean, we got a dude, Alistair Overeem, like, if you were going to find a human being to put on your fight poster, you know what I mean? It might be Chet Congo or him. You're like, dude, like, let me just put this dude on my poster so I can sell me some pay-per-views. The dude has fought in every major organization. He's fought in kickboxing. I mean, the dude is a legit, I mean, prize fighter, right? Then you got the fireman who won't quit being a fireman no matter how long he keeps doing good at this stuff. The blue-collar Ohio guy to a T. This is intriguing as hell. And their attitudes, I mean, Alistair is on this roll. I mean, he's on a nice little roll. He's had a nice little run of success, and he's coming in
with
incredible
confidence.
Even when
he's not on a roll, he's so freaking dangerous. I mean, it's that – one, it's the heavyweight division, but two, on top of it, being one of the elite heavyweights for the past, you know what, 8-9 years.
Right.
Like, even when he was an elite guy, he could beat any elite guy on any given day. Like, yeah, I mean, it's crazy. Like, how Stipe is not feeling pressure in a situation like that, and I truly feel like he's not, which makes it even crazier.
I guess the other thing that's been fun to see about this week, and then I'll ask you what you guys think about this fight, is the crowd, and I want to say the crowd reaction, and I know you haven't been here to see this, Dan, but the rest of the crew in this house right now has. I want to say it's the crowd's reaction to Stipe and Alistair, but it's really like just one dude. There's like one dude.
Harasser.
There is one dude that I don't know who this dude is, but we probably need to get this dude and talk to this dude. And in fact, you know what? He's going
to
be at weigh-ins. In fact, I'm just promising you right now, Rocho, we're going to grab this dude.
Because he's totally in Alistair's head. Like,
I see you, champions.co. It's all right. I already claimed it. You heard me saying it.
That's our video.
Maybe co-produce the video. I don't know. We'll talk about it. But no, we got to grab this dude because this dude has been insane. He's like got chance for everything. He's calling Alistair the glass cannon.
You don't get that stuff in Vegas unless it's Conor McGregor.
Yeah.
You need a hometown fight.
This dude is Ireland all by himself.
Yeah.
All by himself. And then he gets like three or four. I mean, a couple people clap and you're like, hell yeah, man. Look at the reaction here. So
for people who don't know what you're talking about, there's a guy heckling Alistair at all the PR events, right?
Every single one.
And he laughs it off, but you can tell the guy is in his head. Like, he's not happy about it.
Not at all. This dude's chanting at him, yelling at him, like, hey, Alistair, you're going to get knocked out. But it's, like, way better songs than that.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I love it. So it's been kind of fun this week. I will say Cleveland has made a very good impression. So, all right, I'm not going to lie. We actually just taped our staff picks a little bit earlier. Not that Dan would, because nobody would ever ask Dan to take a staff pick. But
I don't want
to
show up on YouTube bronies.
He's like, I'm actually 100% in my picks, but I just don't like saying that.
You're talking about the 2015 MMA Junkie staff picks champion, by the way. Like,
that's true.
I think I picked 68 or 69%.
I said 65. I undersold
okay,
you.
Yeah.
All right, so let me – well – I will say that my man Dan Stupp is not afraid to lay a wager every now and then in the proper circumstances when it is completely legal and allowed and all those things. So, I mean, do you guys – so here's – I'll put my cards on the table. I lean towards Alistair Overeem, and only because, like, okay, I feel like, you know, people are pointing to Stipe's wrestling. I feel like Overeem's a little bit harder to take down than most people give him credit for. The other thing is Stipe's striking. Now, Stipe is strong – but I also feel like he's very, like, not that there's anything wrong with being traditional 1-2, but, like, I feel like you know what you're getting. You're getting the straight-up boxing
1-2. And Alistair has seen that before.
Alistair has seen everything in striking. And, yes, he does get caught, but I feel like he gets caught in, like, the clinch and transit. I don't feel like he gets necessarily, like, just blasted on the outside from a traditional 1-2. So, because of that, I'm leaning towards Alistair. But saying all that, if they're like, John, man, do you mind putting your mortgage on it this month? I'm like, oh, no, because I need my mortgage payment to go through. So I'm not going to do it. So there's no way I would lay any significant amount of money on it, but I'm leaning towards Alistair Overeem. Dan, are you feeling strongly one way or the other?
I'm leaning towards Stipe, and it's for kind of dumb reasons. Like, I really consider – I consider a coin flip fight. Like, most heavyweight fights, I consider a coin flip fight anyway. I think especially this one, like, you know, there's so many intangibles. Like you said, Overeem has seen everything. But Stipe also has the wrestling, which could be the difference maker. Like,
right.
If anything, I'm betting the over in this fight. Like, that's the one thing I could see.
That's
like
interesting.
It could take a full round. Well, at least over a round.
Because Overeem's
going to
be patient. He's going to come out. He's going to do that thing where he's like, he's got that half smile on his face, and he's leaning back and forth.
And they know they've got plenty of time to get it worked out. I could see him kind of slowing it down early on. But, you know, and again, I don't know how much it's worth, but just the intangibles of fighting in front of a hometown crowd, having that energy and feeling like you don't want to let him down, like, it sounds stupid, and that's very minor stuff, but I think that's enough to kind of flip it in Stipe's favor.
And we should say a sellout. It's been deemed a sellout, like, right away. I mean,
it's going to be like Cincinnati, Columbus, the first event. Like, they haven't had an event before. It's
going to
be so excited, like – and they know, like, even if the event sucks and we've seen some crappy events in new cities, like, they know it's all building up to the main event.
Yep.
It feels like an old school boxing event where it's like, okay, all this other stuff's great, but we're here for the main event. And you're going to have that excited atmosphere. And I think Overeem's going to know he's the quote-unquote bad guy
for
the main event.
That one dude's going to make sure that's for damn sure. Cold Coffee, all right, listen, man,
Do you even need to ask?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm going to rephrase the question. I'm going to rephrase the question because you've never made it – you've never tried to hide. You're an Ohio homer, and that's okay. I'm a Texas homer in a way, so no big deal. I mean,
he's going with Bernie Kosar with that first round.
Bernie with the sidearm for the win.
Sidearm for the win. That's an old school shit. Listen, man. I mean, I know you've always been a champ, Ohio. You know, you always got a little Buckeye love or whatever. But you know, when you look at this fight, I know you're back in Stipe because I know you back your Ohio hometown boys. And there's nothing wrong with that, but. Since we don't ask you to be an impartial journalist and write stories or anything like that, but back your homerism.
To be impartial when it comes to Ohio things.
Exactly, back your homerism out of it a little bit. I mean,
screw Michigan.
Let me just preface this non-homerism. I mean, do you feel it's clear cut? Like, just Stipe is the superior. His power is all these things, or are you a little bit concerned? Like, I mean, because dude, Alistair. I mean, not that Alistair's ever lacked confidence,
right?
But I feel like he's even on a different level. I mean, there's sometimes where I feel like Alistair is trying to trick us. You know what I mean? Like, he's trying to trick himself. This week, I feel like Alistair, like, I don't know, man. There's something with him where I feel like he's got it.
You know, it's tough because I've been torn when it comes to Alistair because, watching his facial expression, watching his interaction with the fan, watching his open workout where – to me, it seemed like he kind of coasted through open work, and I could take that two different ways. One, the humidity was an absolute bear. The only people that really kind of went hard at it was just the ones that have
actually,
time here. You know, like
a good point, though.
Stipe went at it, Jessica went at it. Alistair, to me, looked really lackluster, but I was kind of putting it off now. I was thinking it was because of the humidity and didn't want to whatever.
But when you were editing your footage and I was watching it, like, it was very, like, rudimentary.
He wasn't really there, you know? And then even seeing how much of his workout he interacted with his fan rather than just be so focused that he didn't even hear the guy, he really was, like, almost like he was happy to kind of just turn the focus away from what he was doing to pay attention, which was great because it worked out perfectly for all of us, and I think it made it more memorable for the fans to kind of see their own guy getting in it. But it just seemed to me like even though he's putting a good face on it, he's selling it right, but to me it seems more of I don't want to say an act because I think it's an old hat for him. He's been doing this for a long time, but I just think Stipe is more focused for this fight, and I think that being backed by the hometown crowd, and I think Stipe, I mean, Alistair's been doing this for a long time, and I think you got two guys that are really hitting at a high level, but unfortunately, I think it's one guy is not there at the same level where he used to be when he was peaking upwards, which is Alistair, and I don't want to say that he's going down, but, you know, I see a guy at Stipe, he's still learning his – not learning, but I think he's still peaking. I think he's still getting better and better. And I see a guy at Alistair.
Stipe is the raw athlete right now.
Right. And I think he's going to get more refined. He's going to get more polished. And I think he's going to be more impressed. And I think a lot of people will start believing in him more. I just think, I don't know, just after watching Alistair, I'm not sure if he's really as focused on this fight as he's playing. And I think that leads the possibility of the same thing that happened with Verdum. He's going to get caught with something because he's not paying attention for something. And there's those little tangibles. Stipe's got – he's got strength. He's got power in his hips.
Alistair's very tentative sometimes, and he's very good in the way that he's patient and he watches and he looks for openings. But if he makes one mistake, Stipe will make him pay for one mistake.
He's got to be in this. And I'm sure maybe –
Stipe needs to be ready to pounce early, and I think he's going to sit
back
a round or two, and by then it may be late.
And you're right.
Yeah.
If he sits back and like that, you're right. He's gonna play into Alistair and let Alistair become comfortable and probably get focused. The fact that, hey, I'm in a fight.
That's
yeah.
the worst
comfortable like, Alistair Overeem who realizes that, hey, he's still got knees and leg kicks
I've
that
sparred
could
with dudes
destroy
better than
a
you,
car.
Dude. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I just put up his right – and I totally didn't put it all together. I mean, he's coming off four straight wins.
Yeah.
Struve, Roy Nelson, Dos Santos, and Arlovski. Like, you're going to have no confidence after that, no matter if you added some rocky.
Those guys,
that's a list.
Those guys are decent at striking, right?
Yeah.
Those are no slouches of the division. I mean, I think it's going to be a great, great fight. I hope it's one of those ones where nobody wants to see a five-round fight if it's not fun, if it's not exciting.
You also
don't
want to see a 30-second the first time someone gets clipped.
Right.
Velasquez, Dos Santos.
What a letdown.
Like, okay, Dos Santos won, but did we really learn anything
nothing.
From that fight?
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing. You know. Absolutely. All right. Well, so
To go all back, I am leaving.
Shocking.
But I think it's just for the fact that it just seems to me that, you know, I think he's much more focused, and I think the backing of this town, he believes. We're in Believe Land. He believes that he has what it takes to keep that belt.
And the heavyweight division, that's all it takes.
Yeah.
Are you going to drop a Bron reference or something?
Well, you know, I bet Bron's going to be there, or at least trying to get tickets, and he should be there.
Willie Mays Hayes, cage
side. That's great. All right, so to sum it all up, the two Ohio guys are picking the Ohio guy. The one guy who doesn't have a dog in the race is telling you that Alistair Overeem is going to win. All right, let's talk about the co-main event briefly.
Might as well be another country to someone from Cincinnati. But
let's talk about the co-main event briefly. Travis Brown, Fabricio Werdum, danced up, was driving the 8 hours up from Tennessee. So you didn't get to see the press conference today, but I will say this. I didn't have a lot of hype for this fight going in, and I'll be honest with you. I was kind of concerned for Travis. Like, dude, I'm not going to say he didn't look good at UFC 200, but it's just like Cain Velasquez looked so damn good. And it felt to me like one of those situations when he stepped in this fight where it's like, I'm frustrated because I'm pissed because I lost, and now I'm getting into another fight, and it's like, cool, but maybe that's not the best situation for you either. You know what I mean? But I will say this, the press conference today, and Cole Coffey, you could probably speak more onto this, but like Travis was intense at the press conference, number one.
Yeah.
You know, he had the whole –
to say the least.
He had the whole – I'm going to – somebody asked him because Fabricio was basically dismissing him and just saying like, hey, man, once I win, here's my next plan. And Travis was like, oh, well, I'm going to piss in his Cheerios. but when they got together like face-to-face and they had their little stare down, the press conference stare downs usually aren't quite that intense because, I mean, first
they
of all –
they save it for weigh-ins.
Yeah, everybody's wearing their dress clothes. They're trying to save it for the weigh-ins, you know what I mean? But Fabricio kind of walked up, and he didn't do the face. Thankfully, he didn't do the goofy face at
all. Somebody was calling it out. It was probably the same heckler.
Were they trying to ask for the goofy
face? Somebody was like, somebody was like, where's your goofy face?
Welcome to Ohio.
Yeah.
But, you know – he was kind of, you know, Fabricio was trying to be intense the whole time. And then Travis like, came in, like, stood. And then they went, like, nose to nose. And
I didn't see any of that.
Travis wouldn't break. So here's the hilarious thing. So Dana wasn't there for the press conference. So Dave Schaller, of course, who's become, like –
why do they make him try to break up these
guys?
That's
only – you got Travis Brown way up here. Fabricio Verdum not that far below and pretty and like and Travis will not he's like when they're like okay touch him on the like chest okay it's cool you can turn to the crowd Travis won't break eye contact he's like
of
I'm just standing right there.
All these bullshit jobs yeah. That the UFC gives to retired fighters, can't you just hire someone to stand there during the
there
face
you go
off?
Put Chuck Liddell in between
you
and then like there. Oh I will knock you out
even Matt like you need a retired
I was gonna say Matt Hughes like, but I think they put him on the anti-union movement right now
that should be Forrest Griffin's job. He's a heavyweight now, like he's a guy who could break them up and
could
not,
take a punch
and not like not look like a smurf doing it.
There
poor Schaller, I was like, dude, this is about to get there. And just Schaller's doing the like, okay, guys. No, okay, guys.
All the
totally, guys.
The smart guys who are about to retire are always campaigning for jobs.
Like, that's the job.
That's the next job that a guy who's about to retire say you want to be the face-off guy.
That's genius.
Like, yeah.
That's the job.
What's the dude you talked to that lost his wife and he lost his horse?
Don Fry.
Mr. Fry, we got a job for you.
Don Fry will fuck a motherfucker up. He's like, will not care, dude. Like,
he's like, boys, I'll fuck you both up if you step over this line.
But there's nothing graceful about getting your cowboy hat knocked off.
Oh, like, no.
That'd be the only issue.
So I say all that just say I'm actually pretty stoked about this fight now. It does have some implications, especially for Fabricio Verdum. I don't think it has title implications for Travis Brown, but dude, this is a huge.
I don't know. You beat a ex
right.
Like that. Everyone's kind of dismissed him. Like this is the fight to get you right back at the top for him. Like
yeah,
it may not be a title shot, but this is a hugely important.
I think it's a big crossroads fight, one way or the other, man. Like and again, like Cain Velasquez just looks so good at UFC 200. Like I don't really fault Travis for that. You know,
that was peak Cain.
Oh my God, that was like I think that's the best we've ever seen out of Cain. So
it's like, oh, this is why everyone was making such a big deal about this guy.
Yeah,
hell yeah. So suddenly it's funny. After today's press conference, I'm actually pretty hyped up about this fight, and we can't show you the face off, but we do need a little break. I could make a little trip to the men's room.
And we could
re-up on a couple of frosty beverages. So while we handle that real quick, listen to a little back and forth today between Travis Brown and Fabricio Verdum that got me hyped about the co-main event. Travis, can you talk about the decision to step into this fight? I mean, rough go last time, you know, tough opponent. Was there any thought about hanging back and kind of reinventing or, you know, changing some things before you got back in the cage?
No. I want to erase that fight from my memory, you know, so the only way I know how to do that is to get back in there. And opportunity presented itself, and I jumped all over it. So 4 weeks, 3 weeks, 2 weeks, a couple days, doesn't matter. I'm ready to get back in there.
And for Fabricio, could you talk first, I guess, just about your emotions right now, sitting next to Stipe, seeing the belt right there beside you. What does it feel like at this moment?
Yeah, this moment I'm very happy. Now I want to fight again. I call UFC. I want to fight soon. Because the last time, I don't go inside the fight, you know. I'm just... he got one nice punch. I don't have skills for the... I don't have a training. My training is to go very... very good. Everything's okay. Just he got me a very good punch. That's it. And I'm very excited for the next one. Tomorrow, I want to beat Travis Moreau again, you know, the same thing the last time. But this time I want to finish him. And I want to, I don't know, steal my title over him. Doesn't matter for me. I just want the belt again, you know. That's it.
Do you have any regrets? I mean, back at UFC 198, I think people were worried about how relaxed you were. It's like you were having too much fun and worried about putting on a show too much. Do you have any regrets in the way you handled fight week and in the way you handled that fight itself?
No, man. The last fight is over, and, you know, he got it, man. That's it. I don't have an excuse for that, man. I know it's a huge event, 45,000 people there. I'm very excited for sure. I don't fight for 1 year. I'm waiting for a long time for a fight again. And he got it, man. He got a nice punch. You know, I have a good shape. Everything's okay. But I just think the next one, you know, the next one. And after I beat Travis Brown, I want to sit very close to the cage for watch my next opponent. I don't know. It's Steve Miotichio over him. That's it.
Thanks.
When you hear Fabricio talk about his plan and how he's going to finish his match and watch, see who wins between the main event. Kind of not really taking you, I don't know if he's not taking you seriously or what, but I mean, when you hear him talk like that, what's your reaction?
I'm ready to piss in his Cheerios.
Welcome back to the MMA Roadshow. That was the co-main event for Fabricio Werdum, Travis Brown. They got a little bit differing attitudes. I'm actually getting a little more excited about that fight than I was. All right, this is the fight that I feel like people are very intrigued about as well, and we would be remiss if we didn't talk about it. It's so bizarre. We're watching a guy make his UFC debut, his mixed martial arts debut, his fighting debut, CM Punk, former professional wrestler CM Punk against Mickey Gall, a guy that, by all accounts, and just watching the guy, is a legit prospect. I mean, not a guy that should be in the third fight on a pay-per-view in the UFC right now if it weren't for CM Punk, but a guy that should be on your radar. Dan Stupp, you've been covering the sport for a long time. You are the originator, the starter of MMA Junkie. This is a hot-button topic, man. Some people are loving CM Punk. Some people are hating CM Punk. I've got my opinion, but let me get yours.
I like the whole CM Punk thing, just like I like the James Toney thing, the Herschel Walker thing. Like, the worst thing that happens is people realize this is a tough sport that people can't just walk into.
Mm.
And I think people already know that, and if they succeed like Herschel Walker did,
right,
against, granted, it wasn't the toughest competition.
Nah.
But for a guy 45, 46,
pretty cool.
You know, and you learn more about the gym culture because all the AKA guys loved him. You know, a freaking NFL legend, a football legend. He's mopping the mats. And, like, if nothing else, you get a better appreciation for the sport itself. Being a website operator on top of it,
like
that's
it.
Never
like
bad
it.
For
love
traffic.
It.
But, like, you know, as someone who likes the sport, someone who's – profession is based off the sport, like, this is a no-lose situation for me. Either you learn that the sport's legit, he gets his ass kicked by just kind of a middling prospect type of guy you'd see on the second or third fight of a legacy fight, and be
right,
like, oh, that's a guy to
keep
an eye on. Or CM Punk wins, and it's like, okay, you know, that's why you go to good camps. That's why you train with top training partners. That's why you don't rush into a fight and maybe take 2 years to really learn this. And, yeah, you can beat, you know, kind of maybe not a legit prospect, but a guy, a young, good guy. And so, yeah, I mean, worst case scenario, I think it depends on the person. But I think regardless of what happens in this fight, unless it's just a total three-round, both guys looking like crap, and I don't see that happening.
Right.
I think it's good for the sport regardless.
I did. It's interesting because I remember the night they hired him and they announced it. First of all, it's kind of weird because the way they announced it, if I remember it exactly right, like, Dana just kind of came over to press row and, like, told us, like, briefly right before. And then they did, like,
no date, no opponent.
Yeah.
Just, hey, we signed this guy. It's like, really? Why?
What? Yeah. And yeah. It was weird. And I do like what they ended up doing, you know, finding a guy on looking for a fight and all that. But I remember, like, I didn't know anything about the guy. I had to search him on Wikipedia. Yeah,
if you don't follow pro wrestling, it's like me and you, we don't know anything.
I didn't know
about
anything.
This.
Didn't understand at all. I didn't. I thought the greatest thing would have been if Will Brooks would have adopted the name CM Punk, and so that, like, they would have had Bruce Buffer announce Will CM Punk Brooks.
I was hoping Brooks from Shawshank Redemption was the one that they signed, and they'd start a seniors division based around Brooks.
But I tell you what, this guy in the couple of interactions I've had with him, you know, they had a media session with him in Dallas. They had him at a Q&A in Vegas. They've made him available a couple times on
Erickson
the phone.
Erickson went to Milwaukee.
Erickson went to Milwaukee, and we got to see that video. I mean, every time that I've seen the guy talk. And then now let's add in the Evolution of Punk videos that they did. I can't lie. I got nothing but respect for the dude,
he
man.
Respects the sport. And that,
yes!
Like James Toney, like, you wanted to see him get his
hell
ass kicked.
Hell yeah!
Like,
he had no respect for the sport.
Yeah. And you could tell by the fact that he was taken down in 10 seconds and completely demolished. Like, at least Punk knows what he's getting into. He respects it. Like, he said all the right stuff, so it's hard to hate on a guy who's just like, look, I know I'm not going to be a champion. I just want to, you know, really devote myself to this for a year or two and see what happens. Like, how can you hate on that?
It's so funny you say that, because I remember as James Toney was walking to the cage, I remember, you know, the whole build-up to the fight, you're like, oh, my God, he's going to get so embarrassed. Like, he has no idea. But I remember that night as he was walking to the cage kind of having a little bit of fear in a weird way, like – what if he knocks out Randy Couture? Like, how stupid are we going to look as journalists covering this sport, quote-unquote sport? You know what I mean? Yep. Like, it's bizarre.
And he wasn't even a top-level boxer. That's right. The whole thing. It's like, well, if a middling, you know, veteran boxer can come in and make an MMA fighter, Captain America, a former two-division champ, look like crap. Like, this doesn't look good for
us.
Oh,
my God. Yes. And I know that we know we're not fans and we don't have rooting interest, but you do think about the future of your job, and you're like, wow, we're going to look like a bunch of dumbasses if James Toney comes here. So I do remember having that bit of fear. I honestly don't have that fear here. Like, I do believe, honestly, the journey and the effort that he's put in. I feel like CM Punk has proved that he deserved this opportunity. And in a lot of ways, I picked Mickey Gall on our staff picks, and I think Mickey Gall is a superior athlete. It was last week in Vancouver, Cold Coffee, where I think it was off camera, where Jim Miller was talking to us about, like, just how, you know, how good Mickey Gall is. Like, he's been training since he was a teenager, and, like, the kid's a real deal, and I agree with all that, but, like, I mean, I think Mickey Gall is the better fighter, to be honest with you, and just watching their open workouts and watching their movements and their speed and just their fluidity. But I'm not going to lie, there's a little bit of a part inside me that's like, come on, CM Punk, come on.
Like, if he wins, and especially if it's a tight, like, it could be a flashy kick and everyone's going to be like, oh, Rufus Sport, that's awesome. Let's see what else he can do. If he grinds out and wins, be like, well, this guy's actually got, you know, some fight in him. Like,
right.
Regardless of how he wins, I think we're going to want to see him fight again. If he gets – even if it's a tough fight and he loses, it's like, you know, he paid his dues. He did it right. But I was thinking this on driving on the way up, and we were talking about Tough Noobs and stuff like that. One of the things I loved about the first, second, even third season of Tough was that you watch a show, you see these guys, obviously they're very green, very rough around the edges. But that 3 or 4 months by the time the show – finish filming, and when they come for the next fight, you saw so much advancement.
Dude,
like,
you can see
watch Tough One, and then watch the finale.
Yeah. You can see the differences in their bodies, the differences in their skill sets. Yeah,
and I think so much of it back then, like, they weren't making money or anything like that. A guy like Josh Koscheck, it was like, the only thing I've got to show in that 3 or 4 months is that I'm taking this seriously and I'm not going to embarrass myself. And I think that fear of being embarrassed, kind of once you get on a card like the Tough guys did. Like, that's what drove them. Like, and you saw so much improvement from the final season, or from the final episode of Tough to the live finale. Like,
right.
They look like completely different fighters, especially Tough One. Like,
yeah.
I think that's all on Fight Pass. Like, every few years, yeah, I watch the first season of Tough just because it's so
mandatory watching.
Now.
It's like mandatory.
Watching some of the Diego Sanchez and the aliens and cutting off the asparagus with Forrest Griffin and what are you, my dad? Well, that's what your mom calls me. And it's like, dude, it was such bad reality TV. But, like, you saw these guys, and, like, Diego Sanchez, the middleweight, like, looking really, really soft. And then you see him at the live finale, and they look like completely different fighters. Like, that's what I feel like we're seeing with Mickey Gall. Like, he's the type of guy you'd see on Tough One on the final episode who still look like crap. He comes back the finale and looks UFC caliber. And I think we're seeing some of that with this fight where it's like, what can a guy do in 6 or 12 months of really intense training? And I think with Gall, we know what a guy in his 20s can do. What can a guy at 37 really do? We haven't seen that really before, you know?
I'm 38, man. I respect the shit out of that man for doing what he's doing. All right, Cole Coffey, you've kind of followed the journey all along the way as well. You've been behind the scenes when the UFC is trying to do, you know, things like this. But I wonder, because you pointed it out, and it is true, like, man, at that press conference today, he looked pretty drawn out. And, like, his clothes were ill-fitting.
You guys showed me that picture. Oh. I was like, whoa, dude, he looks completely –
It's not good. And he said this is his first weight cut. I mean, it's weird. They're watching a 37-year-old man in the UFC make his first weight cut, you know. So I wonder, I mean, all the training, you know, almost 2 years of intense focus could be completely derailed by the fact that, like, oh, by the way, to tell you about this. All the shit that you've been learning, we need you to also be able to do that, like, 24 hours after you're, like, the most dehydrated and ridiculous you've ever done. So, I don't know. I want to ask you, because – You know you're a known hater of superstars like Conor McGregor.
What are you talking about? I fucking love Conor. We're like best buddies.
Tell me. I mean, what are you hoping for in this fight? What are you expecting in this fight? What are you thinking about it?
What I'm expecting is that Mickey Gall is going to get an impressive win. What I hope to see is that you're right. CM Phil Brooks, I feel so weird calling him CM Punk and people.
It was so weird
like
in the press conference. Some people,
nobody knew what
Mr.
to
Brooks,
say.
CM Punk.
And he kind of just watching his reaction.
I know Matt Erickson was wrestling with that yesterday, putting together the print story for USA Today. I was like, what do I call this motherfucker?
Yeah, just watching his reaction too. You know, I mean, I think he's gonna be going through a hard time, and I think of the fact when he's still cutting the weight. I wish he was to the point where he was already on weight now, so that he could maybe enjoy it. Because you're right, that quick recovery factor, and then he's gonna be dealing with how his body's fighting with him. Then to try to go in and draw upon this training that he's been really working his butt off. I give him all the credit in the world. He's been doing the work. He's been doing. He's not taking it lightly. He's not going in there hoping that just, you know, this kid's going to be wowed by the fact that, hey, I'm giving you
this
fight.
It's not a fight pass fight, you know, in front of 200 people. This is pay-per-view main card.
The pressure is going to be immense. I mean, and he's been in front of crowds, but that's more like stage fright. It was all sort of stage and whatever. They're still taking hard hits or whatever they do in wrestling. There's no doubt about that, but let's be real. When he comes in here now, the fight, you have no idea what your opponent's going to be doing. You have no clue. And when you take that first punch and, you know, all that stuff, if it's not ingrained in your head, it goes out the window. You get in that panic mode. And I hope they've drilled enough stuff into him that he's going to have a library of things to try to do so that he doesn't just immediately turtle up and then just take wallops. Because, you know, I look at Mickey. Mickey's a good-sized kid, man. Yeah. And he looks –
He looks like the real deal.
He looks
man.
Like the real deal. He's a prospect. This kid is gonna. This kid is gonna do something.
He didn't fade under the lights the first time. He's not going.
And he's not gonna do it again. I agree. And I guess if I'm hoping for anything, I want Phil to go out there and put on a performance that he's proud of the work, and I want his team to be happy. I don't want him to go out there, and then something happens in the first 30 seconds. He either does a dumb mistake or does something that. All this work that his team and all these people just goes out the window.
And they just have that question mark
for some reason.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
and you're like, oh God,
this is our word. This is why regular people don't come.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, I was fortunate enough in town in Vegas. There was I forget what small promotion, but I was just trying to get experience as a photog. So I took this thing, and there was a director that had been working on a movie with James Captain Adama. That looks just like Stitch.
Edward James Olmos.
He was like the father or like the trainer of this guy. Yeah. And so he was – this director actually went in and was going to fight. And they literally put him up against like a syndicate fighter who
– Oh, you shot that?
Had some I was doing some photos of it. Cool. Didn't do really anything with it. I just wanted – I was able to get accredited or whatever. But this guy, I mean, when it came down to it, took a solid punch. And then immediately you could just tell he was like
– Oh, shit.
Holy shit, this is real. And this is a guy that had been training for years.
You see that on the regional circuit a lot, too, that instant where someone's like, yeah, I don't want to do this
for
my career.
Yeah. and so hopefully there's he has some – I want to see some shining moments. I would love if he came out and rocked Mickey with something. I know Mickey's going to recover, but even if there was just some glimpses of greatness that I was just so happy for him, that gives – Because let's be real, if he does decent enough, he's going to try to do this again.
Yeah, for sure.
So this pony show is going to keep going on. And
a couple years into it. You want to see someone rewarded for at least putting in the effort. You know, like
nobody wants to see him go out there and just get annihilated. Because one, it sucks because he's a nice dude.
Incredibly
well spoken.
How much traffic has he brought? Yeah. Like I owe him.
How many questions did he get at the press conference today? I mean, he's. He's bringing eyeballs.
It's not in our best interest for him to go out there and get mauled and then
That's
completely
the
walked
way
away.
Yep.
You know, like, so I'd love to see him do well and then want to keep going for it because, like you said, he's bringing a lot of eyeballs.
But that's the thing. Professionally speaking, I think it does good for us to keep him. But I've come to the point now where, like, personally speaking, like, I'm not going to – okay, so when Brock Lesnar came to the UFC, I was like, F this dude. Like, I mean, I hope we get rid of this guy. And then I will admit I flipped because I saw the numbers that he got and he is a personality, but
he is a character.
But he also went into it thinking I'm going to be the top dog. Like
I
know I'm good. And
CM Punk has sold me a different way. Like CM Punk, like I'm like personally pulling for the guy. Like I'm like I just want to see him do good. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like it's bizarre.
He deserves to put in a good showing because he put in the work.
Right, win or lose, I just want to see him have a good fight. I want to see him like. Walk out afterwards and be like, I left it all in the cage.
He's not Dave Pee Wee Herman training with a weight set in his apartment, not joining a gym. Right? Like, he did everything that a guy in his situation should do to get ready for a fight.
100%. So, I'll tell you what, man, I'm hyped for this fight. I know it's bizarre. I know it's a freak show fight, but in kind of a weird way. It's not pride level freak
Joe
show.
Joe Lauzon, Jim Miller is awesome.
Yep.
I'd rather watch CM Punk. Mickey
Gall, I'm more intrigued right now, right? It's just bizarre. You don't know.
I know I'm going to get an awesome fight with Lauzon and Miller. I don't know what the hell I'm getting.
That moment, I mean, literally, that moment when Bruce Buffer is going, I don't know, is he even going to call him Phil CM Punk Brooks?
And that's where USA Today is contacting us. Like, dude, as soon as you guys get your CM Punk stuff up, let us know because that's what general sports fans want to know what's going on.
It's
going
to be that moment of anticipation. I'm excited. So, all right, well, Mr. Dan Stuff, I got to ask you. It has been a long time since we've had you on the road. Now, I can attest from the early days that you literally had the worst luck. I mean, the worst. Like, if a flight was going to be delayed, it was going to be your flight.
If luggage was going to be lost.
It was going to be your luggage. There's no doubt about it. Now, also, added into the fact that you have done well, my friend. You have put yourself up in a fantastic abode. It is out in the middle of nowhere.
Is my dream.
Which is your dream. I mean, I don't think – like, if you're at an event – now, you actually ended up driving, like, 7.5 hours to this event. But, I mean, like, the closest airport to you is, like, 2 hours away.
Two and a half.
Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, like, it's – even to go to the airports that long, so I mean, to think to start the journey is that long a drive, I can see right away how you're like, I'm just out.
Anywhere,
I'm out. Like, but, I mean, I guess for people that don't know, how come – I mean, is it because you don't want to be on the road? Is it because of the difficulty? I mean, why don't we see you out there?
When I travel, that meet – like anything I do event-related or travel-related, I've got to do a regular shift on top of that. It just doesn't make sense for us. Like – I would rather send you or Steven Morocco or Mike Bond and be able to coordinate things at home and work from there. It just logistically, it makes more sense. The fact that you and Kenny can do so much on the road, and the fact that Matt Erickson can hold things down at home, and Brent Brookhouse, it makes it a little easier for me to get out on the road. Like, for a couple of years, I didn't want to sacrifice while we were down at home. I was so burned out from 4 or 5 years of just traveling all the time, us doing Affliction shows, Elite XC shows, mm-hmm. Strike Force shows, like, and not even the good Elite XC and Strike Force shows, like, you know, just really bad ones. And no, I was definitely burned out, and, you know, I was telling Kenny, living up about bars, living on a highway in Cincinnati, like, I just needed a few years of peace and quiet, and I went to the most remote place, the place that I used to go for vacations as a kid, that's what I associated, that was synonymous to me with peace and quiet and vacation and relaxing, and so I made that a full-time home. But no, I mean, it was great to have, I had some MMA writers out last year, Jeremy Botter and Dwayne Finley and Matt Erickson came out, and then you came out with Fernanda. It's good seeing all you guys again. And I think now that we've got the website a little situated, largely because you and Matt and Brent, like, really holding things down.
I'm a big part of it, no doubt.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, no, I want to get out a little. And, like, you know, there's so many new reporters that I haven't met face-to-face. But even, you know, cool people I use, Casey and Esther from MMA Fighting.
Studs.
Like, some of the nicest people you will ever meet in your lifetime, let alone in MMA. Like, it's going to be good seeing, you know, people again. And I guess, you know, I can quit being a hermit and get out of my house in the middle of nowhere.
All right, so listen, I know the story, kind of. The story's been told, kind of. But you started MMA Junkie based on meeting friends out of a house poker game. Should I not say a house poker game?
The
statute of limitations is totally worn out at this time. All right, so
shit's been 10 years ago now.
So I think for people that don't know, I think it'll be pretty cool because, it's been told a little bit here and there, but, like, you know, you were working for the Cincinnati Reds, as you said. You were working in the PR department. I'm sure just, like, fucking killing it, like, just getting rich.
I was making so much fucking money. It was ridiculous. Me and Ken Griffey Jr. just rolling in it. Like, we used to light our
day trips
with
to
$100
Vegas
bills. And, you know, it was ridiculous.
So, you were playing some poker on the side, and I remember the story to some degree, like, Tom, who was our advertising executive in the early days, he had actually made some money by launching a poker site, right? And so you guys just became buddies.
We had some mutual friends, and then we played in a poker game together. It was a lot of, like, PR, journalism, marketing executives in Cincinnati. You know, all the ad agencies, the sports teams, and real good group of guys.
You hear that, guys? He has a list on all of you people. If you ever cross him, he's got you, all of you.
But Tom Cummins and I really kind of hit it off, and he's a really good guy. And I feel bad we've kind of lost contact since we sold the website. But, you know, he had a lot of success with a poker blog.
Right.
He was an SEO, affiliate marketing guy. Like, he knew all the ins and outs. And he was telling me for a while, I was like, dude, he's like, I know you're not real happy working for the Reds, at least from a writing standpoint. He's like, do something, you know, not baseball. And he's like, I can help you get a website off the ground and stuff. And, you know, I'd been searching around for a few months trying to figure what that thing would be. And I was like, oh, wait, I'm kind of into this Ultimate Fighting stuff that none of my friends are and no one gives a shit about that I know. But it was right when Tough One was really starting to take off. And I was like, you know, and I kind of ran out. I was like, what do you think about this Ultimate Fighting stuff? And he was like, man, there's really no one covering it. And I remember back then it was MMA Weekly, Sherdog, and that was it pretty much. You know, Full Contact Fighter and the Underground were still
around. God rest their soul.
Yeah. Sherdog. You know, crossing yourself. But you didn't see a whole lot of good quality journalism. You know, I went to college for journalism, and I was writing for my hometown paper when I was 14. It was just kind of a passion of mine. But you can only do so much, like, in a PR staff, technical creative services for the Reds. But I want to do some writing and some journalism. And thankfully, we started back then. It was the WordPress.org. Like, if you didn't have advertising on your website, you could stay on WordPress.org, and they'd promote you, and within a couple of days, we were doing, you know, thousands of visitors a month.
So do you remember, like, I mean, literally, like, day one? What was day one?
I think one of the first stories we ever did was on the IFL doing championship rings. Like,
no shit.
And me being from baseball, I was like, oh, that's actually really cool.
Right.
Not doing the belts, you know, these guys can wear the rings. And then it was just a lot of fight bookings, event recaps, and – you know, I feel so bad for people trying to start websites now and trying to cover everything. Like, that seems like the obvious way to do it. And it's like, you've already got a dozen websites covering everything. You got to find your own niche. But back then, it was like, dude, if we just do good journalism, AP style, and hired some legit journalists like Steve Siebert from the Houston Chronicle, mm-hmm. and some stuff like that. And it just...
Ah, the business pieces back in the day were fantastic.
It took off quickly, and thankfully there wasn't a lot of I like to think we would have done well even if there weren't a lot of competition back then,
right.
But it made it a lot easier that you weren't really competing with everybody. And I think it was in 2 or 3 months Yahoo Sports reached out and was like, hey, let's talk about a content partnership. And just, you know, I thought it was a thing, and I think I was telling Kenny this earlier, was when I started the website 10 years ago and you came on soon after, there were 14 events a year. It's like, okay, worst case scenario, you know, I'm working for the Reds, and then a couple of days a month, you know, I'm writing about the pay-per-view event. And then within a day or two, it's like, well, shit, now people are coming to the website every day looking for stuff, and it kind of took on a life of its own. But, no, I mean, it was the perfect topic at the perfect time, and it just, you know, we take for granted that MMA is kind of big now, and back then, like, even as a niche sport, it wasn't big at all. Like,
what about the day? Okay, so when you hired me, I was a restaurant manager at the time.
Yeah.
We just
happened to be living 60 miles apart.
That's like, insane. Yeah. We met online. We happened to be living 60 miles apart. You were in Cincinnati. I was in Dayton. When you first hired me, well, at first I was just doing intern work, essentially. Like,
yeah.
I was doing, you know, working for the – it was Tag Radio at the time, now MMA Junkie Radio. I came on part-time at first. Eventually, that became full-time. But I remember the day I decided to quit my restaurant job, which I was making good money, insurance, 401k.
You were making very good money.
Very good money. And left and came. And I remember I was dating Danielle at the time. She's my wife now. And we have a kid together. You know, I remember telling her, and she's like, "You're fucking crazy," and I'm like, "I'm gonna try." So you didn't have the connections, like the responsibilities. But what about the day? Because I don't even know this. I don't ever remember hearing this. The day you decided, I'm gonna tell the Cincinnati Reds, which you, as an Ohio boy and as a baseball fan, I mean, you've written. People might not know this. You've written two different books about baseball. I mean, this was a passion of yours. This was something you loved. You literally just left that behind, walked away,
and parents love baseball. So to tell them, like, hey, you know that dream job I got, you know, and you
I'm
get
out.
Free tickets to all the games and stuff like that? Yeah, I'm going to go write about guys punching each other in the face for a while. Like,
so how did you make that call?
Like I said, we got so much traffic from the get-go. Like, it was like, okay, there's something here. And I really shouldn't admit this, but, like, I was spending a lot of time during my normal work day working on Junkie when I should have been working on other stuff. Like, I never let it, like...
Marge Schott died, though, right? So she can't say
Right.
So you're good.
And even the owner that came after her is now gone, too.
No, so you're good.
We've had a few ownership changes. But I remember, I was like, okay, things are kind of taking off, and I had the opportunity. It was kind of a lateral move within the Reds, going from creative services to consumer marketing, where, you know, I had like 30 college kids who would do game day surveying of the fans who were at the ballpark. So with that, like, one of the things, like, I came up with, like, day night at the ballpark, because we kept everything we were, like, all the research we were getting was most of the people, or a lot of people coming to the games, were guys and their buddies and girls and their girlfriends, like a lot more girl and girlfriends than you realized. It was like, well, you know, get them together, you know, make it a –
right.
So stuff like that. But because Junkie was taking off so much, I was falling so far behind in that job where it made it kind of easy. It's like, well, you can either stick around here and finally admit that I'm 2 months behind my work and get fired, or I can do Junkie full time. So that kind of pushed me in the right direction. But the job I had before that, creative services, I had actually helped start that website. The people I worked with, I fucking loved them. Like Ralph Mitchell, who's still like a VP at the ballpark now, he was an awesome boss, and like he was a designer who really respected editorial. So and I think it really showed like in the game day programs and the yearbooks and media guides. One of my best friends, Jared Rollins, he kind of took over my job, and now he's flourished into this guy who does like editing for everything within the front office. Like when I started at the ballpark or working for the team, we had 30 employees. By the time I left, we had 240. Like they're just, you know, the company expanded so quickly and stuff.
But. Wait, all these years, I think you've said the name Jared Rollins before.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about the dude that was on the UFC.
No. My. He's one of the guys I'm going to see on Sunday when I stop in Cincinnati.
All these years, you told me stories about my buddy Jared Rollins. I thought you were about to do.
He's a big white guy, not a very in shape black dude.
And when I swear to God, I thought you meant J-Rock, dude, all these years.
I thought you may have met him. I think I took you opening day one
that's
year.
That's fantastic. And, wow, we may have had a couple of frosty beverages that day. So,
but no, and you know, like I love the Reds job, but you know, being there, I was always looking for something else to do. You know, I wrote a few books. I was doing a lot of freelance work, and I kind of just want to do my own thing. And once you kind of start something. And you see it starting to really take off. It's like, dude, I'd be kind of stupid not to see this thing through. And all the pieces were kind of falling in place. The Yahoo Sports partnership, you were kind of one of our first employees. Yep. And it's like, well, shit, now everything doesn't have to fall on just me. You know, like you can kind of spread it.
But I will say this, and it's funny because, you know, I know you get it. I get it. People are like, how do we get to the same place? It's like, dude, listen. It's so hard. I mean, we were in the right place at the right time.
A lot of luck,
it was
too.
So hard. But I will say this. I think a lesson that can be learned from you is that, man, you slimmed down so much. Like, you were in an apartment that you were paying, like, well, like, if I remember right, it was like $475 a month or for something like that. Like,
the guy I'm going – like, on the way home after 203, I'm stopping in Cincinnati for a night and hanging out there. It's the guy who was technically my landlord, a guy I used to work with at the Reds. But, yeah, like, I made myself hungry. Like, I wasn't spending money anywhere. The only time I ever went anywhere was traveling for work, come back to a little one-bedroom apartment, you know, traveling. That's why I had so much bad luck with the traveling was we were flying AirTran and every discount airline there was, staying in every shitbag, fleabag motel you could think of. And but it made me hungry. It made me appreciate the success even more, and the fact that now we're staying in freaking an Airbnb that's like 100 times nicer than my house.
My house and your house could fit inside this house.
And we've got decent houses. Like, this is insane. In Cleveland, where there's not a lot of land.
Oh, man, it's awesome. Yeah, I think that's the one big lesson. I mean, again, I think, first of all, if anybody wants to replicate MMA Junkie, that's going to be tough. But I know there's a lot of people that want to carve out their own space in this industry.
And I wish everyone who really put – like, we hired Mike Bond. Like, I could tell from the get-go, just following him on other websites, like, this is a go-getter. This is a guy who promotes his own stuff, who really gives us stuff about – you know, he wants to do unique stuff. He wants to stand out from the crowd. And, you know, some of our freelancers, you know, Robert from MMA Rising and Trent Rainsmith.
Been around forever, yeah.
Like, those are – there are hustlers or guys who bug me to the point where I can't, you know. And please don't everyone – like, I don't want everyone to
just
start
Dan. That's all you
bothering
have to do.
The crap
just
out of
the shit out of
But them. They pitch good ideas to the – and Tom Rooney from Ireland. Like, they pitch really good ideas. And those are the guys who are going to get ahead and I'll, like, tell me what to do and I'll do it. It's like – here's what I can do for you. Don't you want this?
That's
I was like,
it.
Well, I kind of do want that.
That's a great lesson, too. Don't tell people I'm available.
I'll do whatever
you
want.
You need. No. Come. I've got a specific pitch. I've got this story in mind. I've got this. That's great. When you're freelance, that might not get your foot in the door, but once you're a freelancer, like, make sure that you're not going to your editor and just saying, like, hey, I'll do whatever you need for me. Like, have specific pitches.
Get me excited about something. Like, the stuff I hadn't – like, I spend too much of my day, even when I'm not working, thinking about stuff we could be doing. And I think Ben Folks, like us hiring him, that was one of the best things we ever did because he's a guy who really does think all the time about what would make good content.
Yep.
And when I'm bogged down in the details and you and I are trying to get schedules together and stuff, like, we can't always do that. when someone else is pitching me on ideas that I didn't have to spend in that, you know, an evening think about, and it was like, oh crap, I didn't even think of that. That would be a good story.
Yep. Right?
You know, those are the guys, Stephen Morocco, Ben Folks, Matt Erickson, you know, multimedia, anything you need. Like, those are the guys who get hired, is they've got good ideas. Be an idea guy. Like, yeah, see it through and get the stuff done, but have ideas, like, ready to pitch.
100%. The junkie himself, the man. MMA junkie.
Hey, that's legit. That's what I was hoping we'd get out. I had no idea you wrote books.
Well, I mean, I co-wrote a book, pictures, and it was like a picture. One was a
picture.
Like
coloring books? Like kids' coloring books? No,
the opening of the new ballpark in Cincinnati. That
one kind of wrote itself.
Yeah, I mean, it was like the photo editor, so I helped pick out. Yeah. I took a few photos.
But still, you did
a lot of work.
You
could
say you are
a
published author.
The second book I co-wrote with a former Reds player, Tom Browning, guy threw 120 games as a rookie, threw a perfect game, won a World Series, MVP, All-Star, or not MVP, All-Star. Just a really good guy, Cincinnati guy. Like, it was Tales from the Reds dugout. It was so much fun. I had a ton of fun working on it. But like, I'd love to do neither one of those were very serious books, but you know, just like starting Junkie, like when I was doing the Tom Browning book, I was like, dude, I'm biting off a lot here. Like, you know, I got to see it through. And if nothing else, I learned, like, okay, if you're going to start something, be ready. Like, don't think like, oh, okay, in 2 or 3 days I can take a break and take the day off and stuff. Like, the first year's a junkie, we're hitting our 10-year anniversary in a couple months, but I didn't have a day off until you came on full time, and I think that was 4 or 5 years or something like that before I had an actual day off, or I didn't have to. I think I had depression and stuff for like a couple of years, because being on call 24/7 and me being on East Coast hours and the sports being on West Coast hours and just, you know, getting bugged at midnight, 2 a.m. and I think of some of the old school, Ken Pavia, like that guy is only awake during the middle of the night, and that's when he would hit you up, and you know,
right when you're trying to fall asleep.
Yeah, just after a 16-hour work day, and you've had a little herbal help, and you're just ready to crash, and then, hey, Stup, what's up? Like,
God bless him. Ken Pavia, now a father, too, dude, like crazy how times change.
Yeah, it's fun. And, you know, he was such a big, prominent fit, him and Monty Cox, and, you know, that the agent wars back in the day and stuff. But, no, once I brought you on, I never thought it would get to the point where we have guys like Matt and Brent and Ben and Kenny and Justin and Abby.
Our Brazilian team.
Literally got people all over the globe. And, I mean, it's
nuts.
And then you run it, you know, talk to the readers who have been there for the entire 10 years. It's like, oh, yeah, I remember when I was UFC junkie. It's like, really? You do?
Because I don't remember that shit.
Yeah, because I can barely. That's all a fog to me right now.
And it all comes full circle back in the OHIO for UFC 203. Just real quick, anything you're looking forward to, guys? I mean, we got Faber versus Rivera on the main card. That's a sick fight. I think it could be a possible Rivera upset. We got Jessica Andrade, JoJo Calderwood opening up that main card. That's great. Betch Coea versus Jessica I. Jessica I.
Coea Calderwood's my favorite. She's my favorite.
Oh, I didn't realize. It's Cole Coffey. We collected some audio from JoJo Calderwood talking about.
I think Dan's so cute and handsome.
Oh, we collected. Unfortunately, the tracks got, as we collected the audio, the left channel and the right channel overlapped themselves. That is bizarre.
I've liked her since the Cage Warriors days. And there are a certain segment of the male population or male MMA fan base who's just infatuated with her. And
she's
the same
awesome.
Way.
That's
she's
a fun fight. And this fight is fun because Jessica Andrade is powerful, but she's got to get
dangerous.
Right up in your face. If JoJo can keep a little distance and pick her apart from range, I think that's a great fight. I think it's really cool. I mean, the two women's fight that we get in a row, Betch Coea, Jessica I.
That's going to be
Jessica
a good one,
too. Jessica I has had such inconsistencies, but, dude, she looks
Cleveland.
So
she looks so
focused,
ramped up.
Man. Oh, my gosh, she looks so focused.
Yeah. Watch her at the open workouts, work in the crowd. I mean, she immediately came out and had, like, gifts for the people that were there. They were loving it up. She was eating it. She got emotional. It was hard to not get an emotional watching her get emotional.
I'm not
going to
lie.
You know?
I started crying a little bit when she was giving her interview.
Yeah.
They're loyal to Cleveland.
It is. I mean, it's Cleveland, it's good people up here, and then to see them where they are their champions, even though she's not a champ, she might as well be a champion for the Cleveland people. She literally is carrying the city on her shoulder, and so I'm excited to see what she's going to go in there and do, and that's a good fight. And Betch, I think, wants to try to get back on the good foot. I think there was a point where people were really considering her, you know, this big thing, you know, and then, you know, once she took that bashing from Ronda, I think people kind of forgot how dangerous that she was. And I think
Betch will always play a supporting role in Ronda's downfall, because for Ronda to come out and knock her out like that, I think gave her such confidence in her hands that she shouldn't have had, that she shouldn't have had.
Yeah, you talk about the old school junkie days. Like, you remember Sean Salmon? He used to do a column for us when he first came into the UFC.
Wore the logo, right?
Yeah.
Wore the logo. You guys sponsored him one time. One fight.
When he got his head kicked off by Rashad Evans.
Oh, it was that fight?
Yeah.
Sorry about that.
Well, and then it kind of really picked up for his next fight, and then he got quickly tapped out. Got caught in an Eric Schaefer guillotine.
Right.
After his UFC stint, and he was kind of trying to rebuild.
He was swimming upriver.
I would drive up to Cleveland to watch him fight in the NAAFS,
right.
the Cleveland
Jessica
base
I.
fight night at the flats with Jessica I, and where a lot of the Ohio Fighters got their start.
That's crazy.
But even before because I love getting caught up talking about JoJo, because she's so awesome. Literally, look at this fight card.
I'm going to kick
your
ass.
Even though we haven't touched it, I know people are going to give us grief, but I know we're wrapping this thing up. But literally, this card is so sick. Tavares, Magalhães. I mean, Yance Medeiros is probably the nicest dude in MMA.
He's going against Sean Spencer.
Which is also another nice guy. But, I mean, God, Yance.
Rivera. Isn't Faber the underdog now? No one's talking about that.
Faber's the
underdog.
Crazy.
Nick Lentz is fighting on this one. Nick Lentz is
Dalloway
also.
Moving Dalloway's back up to 205. Fight. Moving up to 205.
And on TV finally now.
You know, and maybe it's partially we're our own fault. It's hard not to talk about Stipe over him. It's hard to not talk about CM Punk. When you got all these other guys,
it's gonna be an early crowd too showing up.
I mean, right from the get go, when you look at the fights that are going on, Dober's a tough cat. I mean,
Nick Lentz is on the card,
dude.
This is a sick
card. I mean, if people haven't decided or if they're on the fence of buying the pay per view, not that I'm getting any points from the UFC or anything, this is a good card to watch. I think this is going to be a good one, top to bottom.
Speaking of points for the pay per view. Has anybody done the math
Stipe,
on Joe Silva?
Well, Stipe also has to pay for Punk's kids to go through college, because I'm sure Stipe's getting a percentage of the pay-per-view, and you're going to owe CM Punk a few bucks or that.
So speaking of the points, has anybody done the math on Joe Silva? So, you know, we talked about Joe Silva walking away.
Does he get points?
Okay, here's the thing. He got paid. And I knew he got paid, but I didn't know how much he got paid.
I heard seven figures. Wow, you're making it look like I'm way lowballing.
No. But no, seven figures sounds about right. I have to see how many figures are in the amount that I'm hearing in my head.
Three, six.
That's eight, two commas.
Six, seven. Okay, think about this. I didn't do the math. Well, I did do the math. Let's say he had a half point. A half point.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
A half point.
I would tell that – that's fuck you money. Like, I would tell everyone, go fuck yourself.
Million.
Yeah.
If he had a half point.
He was important.
And that's not like out of the realm of possibility, right?
I know we talk about the Fertittas and Dana, but Joe Silva is in that same group. Like,
so if he had a half point, $20 million. Now, I mean, he's got to pay taxes, so, I mean, he's got to, like – he's got to be like, man, I'm only getting like 13.
He's a smart enough dude where you could give him $500,000. He'd be like, I'm done because I know how to live within my means and I'm never working again.
Right.
Like, give him $20 million, he's going to be living very comfortably.
Right?
Yeah.
Good for Joe Silva. I know how it got 24/7 on call.
Nonstop. I mean,
dude, never. Dude, everywhere. Emails and texts responded to within like 12 seconds.
Yeah. Good for him. Good for fucking him. He
deserves never
it.
Got the credit he deserved because he wasn't allowed to do interviews.
Wasn't allowed to talk about it.
Like, and I, you know, it's the same where I even joke where it's like, okay, you know, on Twitter, it's like, okay, MMA fans, yeah, Joe Silva has the greatest job. Any of you would take it, that's fine. And then people respond, well, yeah, he does have the easiest job.
Oh,
I would do that.
No.
It's like, dude, go fuck yourself. Like, you have no idea what the job entails.
Sometimes I have one of the greatest jobs in the world, and it sucks sometimes.
Yeah.
That dude's job is like 10 times suckier than mine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? At least sometimes I can be like, guys, I'm drunk. I can't answer right now because I've had too many frosty beverages.
The matchmakers are never allowed to talk to the media. I still don't know how a couple of years ago Ben Folks got the UFC to okay Sean Shelby and Joe Silva talking to him. Google it, whatever. There's a story that Ben – it's called Misunderstood.
It's literally one of the only stories on records where they were both able to speak.
And they talk about the tough part of the job is telling a guy that you've become friends with that you really respect that, hey, you're not good enough to be in here, so I got to cut you. Like – a guy you consider your friend and stuff. Like, imagine firing a couple hundred of your friends every year.
They know the ins and outs.
If you pay me enough, I'll do it. It's like, dude, you don't – then they're not your friends.
Yeah, because they know their families. They know their kids. I mean, they're invested in these guys' lives. So it's – I mean, they're not robots. I mean, they're affected when these changes, when things have to happen. These are nice guys that we've all been lucky enough to kind of hang out. We'll have drinks. You know, they're human beings. And – no human being is not going to be infected anytime you have to literally change another person's life by giving the news that none of them want to hear. And these guys have had to do it over and over and over. Nobody wants that job. As much as you say whatever, that's going to wear you down.
Like the fun part. Aaron, you want to play the chess pieces.
Yeah. Nobody wants the bad part.
Aaron Riley or guys who have had 4 or 5 UFC stints. Like, they're guys you've gotten to know and that you've had to fire 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's got to suck, you know? You know, pay me enough money and I could probably put up with it. It still doesn't make it easy or make you feel like crap at the end of the day. But those guys are awesome at their job. And especially Joe Silva, I don't think people realize how much they're going to miss him.
No doubt. Well, it's been a special treat having Dan Stop. Maybe we'll have him on the road a little bit more often. Who knows?
I'm looking at Toronto. I may get to another couple ones. And I might even leave the country. I've left
well,
for
Toronto
Canada.
Be leaving the country.
I was going to say that.
I don't count America's Attic as really leaving the country. So.
There's good things in Toronto. I bet he can be enticed to want to go to Toronto.
What do they have some things
in Toronto? I've been to Toronto. I've been to Montreal. I love Canada. Like, good people. Like, I've never had an experience with a fan in Canada and not being totally blown away. Plus, you got the French Canadian chicks who speak French.
Great.
I took French in high school.
Relaxed.
I don't understand any of it, but it sounds so cute when they say it. So it's all good.
So that's what the future may hold. In the meantime, the future holds UFC 203 on Saturday night, and the future for us holds some frosty beverages and a little bit of editing. So let's just get it done.
Oh,
IO.
I was writing a hit song right there. That was some Kanye level shit. Kanye is like, where's that flow? Where's that flow?
That's my baseline for you. That's a deep bass. That shakes your walls.
Yeah.
Is that some Beastie Boys shit you're channeling? You channel from the Rock and Roll
Man,
Hall
we
fans?
Got to shoot in front of the Beastie Boys today, dude. Like,
boom.
Yeah. Did you see the little clip we put together?
Boom.
Did you see it? It came out nice, right? Like a little, dress it up a little bit, you know. Instead of a press conference highlight, like we're hanging out. Boom. But yeah, I got to do a stand up in front of the Beastie Boys display. That.
In the rock and roll motherfucking house. You got to walk through the wall, dog. Through the wall. Do you see that was the Pink Floyd wall that they had? It was pretty dope. Off to the side, you don't see it, but they actually had like the recliner chair that I think was from the movie where half of the movie where he's sitting in the fucking recliner watching the TV and he's like losing his mind because he's not with his wife or whatever. They had that fucking recliner there. I was like that movie. I loved that fucking movie. Like, did a lot of acid and watch that like a lot of times.
Oh yeah,
a lot of times. That's why I'm like half crazy.
No. We're about to start, but you can totally like chill in the background or whatever. Like,
boom.
Don't feel like you have to be quiet or
no, because I can't even pretty much.
It doesn't even
pick
up the TV. Like, do you have earbuds with you?
Oh, if not, we can rent some for very cheap. One-stop shop.
Bass in your ear.
Let's hear you, Dan.
testicles. 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
3 testicles, like a freak.
That's a good sounding testicle right there. Let me hear you, John.
1, 2, 3. I'll probably get a little excited because I talk kind of loud because I just am.
It's funny because I can hear you fucking picking up in his fucking mic. I see his fucking levels jump over there.
And Rick knows too. Like, we've done this before. Like, we'll try to do like a 2-person shoot and like one microphone isn't working or whatever. So we'll just be like, okay, look, John's over here. We'll put the microphone on the guest. You know what I mean? Like, dude.
He's like, wow, it's still here. Totally, perfect audio.
Yeah. Dude, as soon as we – I mean, y'all can hang out and have a couple beers or whatever, right? So we'll watch that. Then we'll
We're only aiming for like an hour.
Yeah, we're only going to do like an hour. Like an hour. See? Good. You ain't got nowhere to be.
Yeah,
man,
the second half just started, you know what I mean?
You got football underway. You got – there's like 50 beers in the fridge. There's like a – there's like a cabinet
like
full of liquor.
Beers in there. There's actually – just don't
there's
touch
some
the 40s.
Yeah, dude. Prescriptions are being
distributed. Somebody mowed the lawn. You know, there's plenty of – plenty of medicine out back.
All right, we're rolling. We're good. Let me know when we're good.
Yeah, we're rolling. You peed out there?
No, he dropped a deuce.
Did you really? That was Rick Lee of champions.co deuce. That's a champion deuce out there.
Champions.deuce.
There's your hashtag right there.
Hit it with a kick.
Nobody takes a deuce like a champion.
All right, we're good?
Yep. Many a liver has been ruined because of Morgan.
we're not the
it's
shining.
It's fine when it's his own, when it's mine.
Yeah. It's not ruined. It's just pickled and hardened for use later on in a salad or something.
I'm getting secondhand liver disease from Morgan over here.
Yeah, what's the junkie health benefit on liver disease? Like,
I paid my deductible. Fuck it. I'm going all out till December 31st.
That is awesome. All right, we good?
Yep.